hand. And by the time it gets to the school, it's very little money.
I think you're probably about right.
That's the way I figured it out.
But I grew up in AME church, as you well know, so I understand that. Uh-huh. Let me see if we're still recording here.
All right.
Yeah, the numbers should be going up. Yeah, they're going up, so mm-hmm. we're okay. All right. Well, that was a...
It was a nice romantic union.
Courtship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm.
And then he left and went back to Camden because of...
Illness for both of his parents, and he was the oldest boy. His sister was older than he was, mm-hmm. but she had a child and had broken up with her husband or something. Mm-hmm. So he had to go and see that the family was well taken care of. He had three younger brothers underneath him. One was adult and married, mm-hmm. and the other two, which was called William and Jerome. Jerome was 8 years old at that time when we married, and his other brother was about 13 or 14.
Okay, they were mm-hmm. very much young.
Mm-hmm. So he had to really be the
breadwinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it all worked out because the minister of their church, which was called Mount Moriah Baptist Church, had died, and he was in his 80s or 60s or 70s or something like that. So they asked Jimmy to become the pastor because he had had his clergy license since he was about 19 or 20.
Oh, that's good.
And he told me that he had gotten it early because during that time they were drafting the men into war, but clergies were exempt.
Oh, well, that makes mm-hmm. sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons he wanted to get his clergy early. Plus, he felt dedicated to becoming a minister.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did he leave Wilberforce before you did, or did
he left in January, and I left in June, the following June.
Okay, so he came back and. Got you.
We are back. We corresponded and talked on the phone, and then he had asked my mother and father if he could marry me, mm-hmm. and then we married in December 1951. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Talk a little bit about your early marriage and where you were and what you did.
All right. My early marriage was a very great experience because I lived in Milwaukee, which we call the North, and I went to school with white and Hispanics and Asian children, mm-hmm. and so when I had gotten to Camden, South Carolina, where my husband lived, and everything was segregated, so that was a new experience
for me. I bet
it
was.
Even though you studied it in the schools, and you read about it in the paper, but to experience the difference was something unusual for me.
I bet it was.
When we would go to Columbia, South Carolina, to the movies, because Camden only had one movies, and I was a movie addict. And I always thought Jimmy liked the movies, but he said, I only went to the movies for you, in order to be with you. That's the only reason I went to the movies. Because we would go in Ohio on Sundays. And so he still had to take me to the movies. So we would drive to Camden, to Columbia, South Carolina, which was 30 miles, and go to the movies. And you see the segregated bathrooms, you see the segregated places in the restaurants and the water fountains, mm-hmm. and everything was so different. And we had to sit upstairs in the balcony. You couldn't sit downstairs with other people. And I wasn't accustomed to that, but I adjusted. I didn't complain. I obeyed the rules, as they say. And then during that time, Dr. Martin Luther King was on his journey to become a great man with stopping segregation.
Mm-hmm.
That was doing around that same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the NAACP would have meetings at our church, Mount Moriah Baptist Church. And during that time, if you wouldn't remember, but your parents would, they started burning churches.
I remember that.
And everywhere you could find out where a church was burned, it was always in the South, and they felt that it was the Ku Klux Klansmen burning the churches, because the church people and the community were meeting to stop segregation or to whatever, to discuss it and see what can we do to follow Dr. Martin Luther King's method of stopping segregation. So one morning about 3 o'clock, someone called, and my husband answered the phone, and they said the church was on fire.
Your church?
Yeah, our church at Mount Moriah was on fire. So I can see Jimmy, remember Jimmy getting up, getting dressed, and being excited and running out there to the church where it was, because his mother and father lived in a beautiful as. That's another thing I didn't realize, that a brick home was supposed to be a nice home. I always thought a home is a home, whether it's brick or wood.
Right.
But his mother was always talking about so-and-so has a beautiful brick home. They would emphasize that brick home. And I said, Jimmy, what is it about a brick home? He said, a brick home is more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So we all lived in one household, too. I'll get back to that. And so Jimmy went to the church, and it was burning. And they, the fire department put what they could out, but they had to rebuild the church. It was burned very badly. And my husband, being a carpenter, a painter, and also a professional person that, that was educated, he still liked that carpentry work.
Mm.
He really was good at carpentry and designing. So he stayed on at the church and rebuilt the church back. And we stayed there about 3 or 4 years later. And then he decided to resign because he wanted to finish his education. And he liked Wisconsin. And it wasn't because of Wisconsin. I think he liked the season of the weather. He liked the hot, and the summers and the fall and the winters.
Mm-hmm.
I say that. So he wanted to go back. He wanted to go to University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
So we came here to live in Milwaukee and stayed with my mother and father for 1 year prior to coming to Madison.
Okay.
And that is to make his registration fees cheaper.
Oh, right. Because
if you
right.
are
admissions.
A resident, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He waited a year to be, and he worked for the VA hospital in Milwaukee. And that enabled him to have a cheaper rate to attend the college, the university. And he made a big name. Everywhere, anywhere, he could have lived anywhere, and he would have had a big name.
He'd have been fine.
Because, I think he just was destined for that.
That kind
of
person.
For anything of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
He was that kind of person.
Now, you adopted your daughter
before
you left.
Yes, I did. Yes,
right.
We did. She was a year old she was 6 months old when we came. Year. But when we came to Madison, she was a year old.
Okay.
Yes.
How'd you like living with your in-laws? And how
was
it?
It
was
fine because his mother was ill and quiet and mostly bedridden because she was so ill. And I and another sister-in-law of mine helped take care of her. But my husband's father, my father-in-law, was in a mental hospital.
Mm.
He had to stay at a mental hospital because of his illness, and he died in the mental hospital.
Mm.
So it worked out fine, because I'm a sociable person. I'm just like that. And another incident I'd like to tell, when my husband came to visit with us for the first time in Milwaukee, my parents owned a house that we lived, a duplex that we lived downstairs. And there was another section of the house where someone could live, upstairs, another family.
Mm-hmm.
But my father turned it into a rooming house because that was during the war where people were coming to work in the war plants.
Mm-hmm.
A.O. Smith and, and all those up. We had two or three of them in Milwaukee. And so Daddy rented rooms. He had the living room he turned into a bedroom. The dining room he turned into a bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the bedrooms were all three bedrooms. And then there was a kitchen, and I can remember three or four refrigerators in the kitchen mm-hmm. part. And so my mother's a beautician too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always sociable with the clientele,
mm-hmm.
patrons that come to the beauty shop, and then the rumors upstairs. It was just like living in one big family. And Jimmy said to himself when he was there once, visiting, and he saw people coming in the back door, front door. And they just come into our kitchen and start opening everything they needed. They didn't ask. And he couldn't understand that. And my father had a freezer, too, and I think some of the rumors must have kept some of their things in the freezer. He said, people are coming out of the woodwork. Where are these people coming from? I said, well, the rumors upstairs. And then the people in the beauty shop, if they wanted some water or want something cool to drink, where we didn't have pop machines and mm-hmm. stuff that, in the beauty shop during that time, they just come to the refrigerator and get what they wanted. And he said, well, when we get married, I don't want to have a Grand Central Station. And I said, well, if you marry me, that's what you're going to have.
Because you're used to people coming and going.
Yeah. And then he understood. After he married me, he understood. Then when I went to his home to live, his brother and his wife was there, and they had two children. And then the school that Jimmy went to was Mather Academy. And when we would go to church, the students would come to visit with us, come to church services mm-hmm. too, from that Mather Academy. That's a high grade school and high school.
Oh, okay.
And, junior high during that time. And I would invite some of the students over to the house to have dinner with us. So they got used to it even. So I turned his house into a Grand Central Station. And if Jimmy's brother, who is in South Carolina, who is in New York now, he would say, yeah, Jackie had kids, had people coming in. And his mother, no, never. They'd go upstairs and see Mama, his mother. I turned it into a Grand Central Station, yeah.
Well, it sounds uh-huh. like it was part of uh-huh. your life early on.
Uh-huh, yeah, so he got accustomed to that. And then when we moved to Madison, I remember coming on the bus from Milwaukee visiting my parents for some reason. And then there was a student on his way, African student, trying to find his way to Milton, Wisconsin. So he asked me, after getting off the bus, Badger bus, and he said, do you know how I can get a bus to Milton, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. to go to school? He was going to school there. And I said, no, but we'll go up to the desk and find out and did all that. Then I exchanged address with him and telephone mm-hmm. number. And I said, well, when you have some weekends off, you come and see us. And sure enough, just about every weekend he came.
And had dinner.
Yes, he did. He stayed. And I've had so many African students. They call me Mom.
Oh, I know.
And Mother's Day, you should see the cards I get from the African students.
Well, that's great.
Oh, and then when we went to Wilberforce, there was two African students there. And one man, I can remember his name, Seth O'Bean. After he completed his degree at mm-hmm. Wilberforce, he came to Marquette because he wanted to become a doctor.
Mm.
And so he had my telephone number and address and knew who Jimmy and I was. But Jimmy and I had gone to Camden because we were married.
Mm-hmm.
But this gentleman came to my mother's house and visited with her, and they became good friends.
That's
and
great.
My mother had him digging up the garden and saying, I know you from Africa, you know how to dig a garden. And doing all right like that. And I think about Seth O'Bee now. He's in somewhere in Nigeria.
Oh.
He is a doctor now. And that's been so many years
ago.
That
is. That's a long time.
But the But even my friends growing, well, see, like I told you, when I grew up, all the kids came to our house because we didn't have an elaborate, beautiful house, but it was just a home type, mm-hmm. home mm-hmm. setting. And my mother didn't care about the kids coming and hanging out. It was like a center or something. Mm-hmm. So my mother said, after I married, the kids were still coming to visit. She said, I haven't been lost for any children.
So oh, that's great.
They still come by and see my mother and sit around and everything like that.
That's something.
Yeah, but that is the lifestyle that I have. Just like the lady who just called, she's been ill.
Mm.
And had some kind of operation. So a couple of days this week, I've been getting in touch with her, calling her. So she was giving me all the prognosis of her, mm-hmm. how she's feeling and doing everything like that. You know?
Just to kind of update
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. You're reporting to me.
You know, it's nice that there's somebody like that around uh-huh. to do that.
Yeah, she just called and said, well, I'm sitting on the porch now. I heard her say that. I'm feeling
that's
a little
good.
Better.
That is.
She knows I would be interested in if she, you know,
right.
getting better. Yeah.
Now, you've always been kind of, well, you said your mother was jovial.
Yeah, my mother's like that.
But you're very upbeat.
Uh-huh, my mother's like that. My father was quiet, and but he had what we call dry humor. You know, mm-hmm. he would say things that was funny, like the economy today. I could imagine him saying, with the things being like it is and not enough money, he said, well, Jack, we're still going to buy butter. We're still going to buy... We're not buying margarine. We're going to buy butter because if we're just going to go down with the ship. Now, don't let the economy
don't
bother.
Let it
we're still going to eat.
Well, that's good, though, that he was,
mm-hmm.
that your family was so upbeat.
About it.
Uh-huh. And you've lived a pretty rich and productive life.
Yeah, yes, I have. I say so.
You know, just as a person uh-huh. observing.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Were there any times when you felt as though things changed or that you had some low periods in your life?
Oh, definitely. I get depressed now, of course, yes. Raising teenagers, my children, you know, gave me a lot of problems. Normal, just like anybody
that's
else.
That's what I was about to say.
Coming in late at night and early morning and mm-hmm. where have you been and why didn't you come by the curfew and you know, and not doing as well in school as they should and running with the wrong mm-hmm. kids and yeah, oh yes, I've had some low moments. Yeah.
Okay. But mm-hmm. what has kept you motivated in
well, my Christian attitude. I'd say before I became a born again Christian, I was a do gooder, like uh-huh. like doing all going around doing good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even before.
Yes, uh-huh. But then when I really truly became very despondent of my illness, my arthritis was getting worse and painful, and my husband had made an appointment at Mayo Clinic. We went there, and they gave me a complete physical workup, but then at the end of the workup, I stayed there 2 or 3 days, they said there isn't anything they could do because there wasn't any cure for arthritis, and then they fitted me with a brace that would go, you've seen people with brace with something up under their neck,
mm-hmm.
and it's a big metal thing to go around my body.
Your waist?
Uh-huh. For me to keep my head up.
About what age were you?
I was about, let's see, I'd say about 30.
Oh, well, that was kind
mm-hmm.
of.
I think I was about 30 years
mm-hmm.
old,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And so I was disappointed in that you couldn't do anything for pain. And then, you know, you have to have these pills. You have to go on, you know, physical therapy
mm-hmm.
and heat treatment. And they had something called a TENS machine. When you're in pain, you have to set up this machine and put it on your neck and back. And,
mm-hmm.
and it vibrates, you know, all of these things
mm-hmm.
like that. So that was a time when I had to really, during my prayer life, pray and ask the Lord to, you know, help and heal
through
me.
That point.
And how that came about, too, I had given my son a diary for Christmas along with his other gifts. And he always liked living down in the lower area, the
mm-hmm.
basement,
mm-hmm.
made himself accommodation Sure, like he had his own pad or something. Like he was something else. And so then he'd come up just to eat and go back down to his own little space. And I gave him this diary, and he brought it upstairs and said, "What is this for?" And threw it on the table. "I don't want this." I said, "That's for you to put your thoughts down and whatever you want to, your daily things that you want to talk about, and you know, want to keep it written down for your own records. I don't need that." So then I said, "Well, if he doesn't want it, I'll start writing a diary. I'll start using it." Mm-hmm. So I started writing a diary in the form of prayers.
Mm-hmm.
I started off with, "Dear God, my children are getting on my nerves," and da-da-da-da. "Dear God, my husband came home late. Dear God, he's so busy, he doesn't have time for us." And I just said, "Dear God, dear God, mm-hmm. dear God." And around the third or fourth page of that little tiny small diary, I said, "Dear God, I want you to help me in life and forgive me for my sins," mm-hmm. "and something else and something else. And I want to always live for you." And something, I just went through mm-hmm. a sinner's prayer without anybody voicing it for me. And I, after a few days, I began to see a change.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that God was a reality. And like I said, when it was during Christmas that I gave this diary to my son. And then when I would go outside, the snowflakes looked pretty. Everything, mm-hmm. I was talking with a young mm-hmm. lady Sunday, bringing her home from church. She said, "You know, I look at the trees, and I look at everything was looking more beautiful." I said, "You may be having a renewal mm-hmm. and drawing closer to the Lord." I said, because that happened to me when I really confessed my sins mm-hmm. and asked the Lord to really come into my heart, really come in. But all this other time, I was just busy doing good, just doing good things, mm-hmm. you know. And I didn't have all those glory sins like a lot of people, you know, have.
What's a glory sin?
That means drugs and adultery, you know.
Okay,
all
those big drastic changes.
Drastic change.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I've always been basically going about doing good mm-hmm. or being a do-gooder. Because mm-hmm. Jimmy used to say, holier than thou. and then he used to call me Goody Good Two Shoes. You know, you Goody Good
Two Shoes. And he was the minister.
Yeah, goody. He said, "You are Goody Good Two Shoes," or something like that. And I would laugh at him. Mm-hmm. So that's when a change really came into my mm-hmm. life, is that I confessed my sins to the Lord and told him that I want him to cover me with his blood. Anything you can think of that you know
uh-huh.
that the preacher's been preaching, mm-hmm. and what I really felt that I should really do it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes to a time when everybody,
I think so,
will come to that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just really last.
So that's what you feel has really kind of made the difference.
The change, uh-huh.
Difference
and then
life.
My outlook on life is much better. I get depressed at times. I have lots of pain yet in my body, but I know that God is real, and that's the consolation that I have. And then I understand why people do the things they are, why are they angry, why they say gossiping things, and why they do this. That's revealed to me, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you'd be more patient with people
right.
until they come to the knowledge.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's probably a good good story for a lot of people who just need some
encouragement. Yeah, that's what they call a testimony.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking that one of my questions was something to the, how do you find time to encourage, what do you do to encourage people mm-hmm. in difficult times?
By example of my life. It's not to fret about things that you can't do anything about. It's almost like that prayer
that
the alcohol.
Serenity prayer.
Yeah, it's like the serenity prayer. That's a good prayer.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And that Indian statement that you don't know if you unless you walk in their shoes.
That's exactly right.
And it's, I mean, all those things are really, somebody thought, yeah, that is correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, take a little slightly different mm-hmm. turn. during my growing up, I remember that black women were really, in addition to the church,
mm-hmm.
they were also very much involved in organizations
yes.
That would uplift the community
mm-hmm.
or help
mm-hmm.
African-American
yes.
children.
Yes. Yeah,
did you have any of those kinds of...
Women, yes. My grandmother, my aunts, and neighbors, yes. And teachers, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Because I can remember in your Beloit area, there was a teacher named Mrs. Gordon,
mm-hmm.
and she was an aunt to Rose Dawson. You know, Rose,
mm-hmm.
you know, the
mm-hmm.
Gordons. She came to Milwaukee, and she was our very first black teacher.
Oh, really?
And we were so crazy about her, the black, you know, kids. We're just so happy to have a black teacher in grade school. And on Saturdays, we liked her so much that there were various times, and I know she didn't have time, but we would go by her house on Saturdays just to see her.
Uh-huh.
And she would let us in and talk to us and give us cookies and milk and take so much time with us. And I often think about somebody was on TV, Black, have you been watching CNN, Black in
oh,
America?
Yes. Right.
And there's someone, there is a principal that has a school, and then they said there's somebody in your life growing up that changed you and made you how you should be
mm-hmm.
walking in the narrow way or having a good job or whatever profession you chose. Somebody guided you to want to be like
right.
that. And D.L. Hughley was on, and he had his white teacher with him. He said, this is the man that turned me around.
Uh-huh.
Because when he was a young boy, he used to do fights and be in gangs and whatever. And this man told him that he was going to be something. And,
right.
Yeah. And so, and then, so if you ever think somebody in your family, but I remember Mrs. Gordon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She was an aunt to the Gordons that lived in
Beloit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I kind of know.
Uh-huh.
I know the family, but I
yeah,
don't know
okay,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because
there was Rose Gordon Dawson, and you know they had.
Right.
Because we have Gwen here. No, Gwen.
Gwen.
Gwen. There's Gwen, and also the Linda, who's married
Linda
to
Allen.
Yeah,
she's
that,
a Gordon.
See, all those are Gordons.
And Winnie Gordon.
Mm-hmm, and they all are educated people.
Yeah.
Just about every one of them.
Right.
Are educated.
Now, mm-hmm. did you belong to any women's organizations?
Yes, I joined the Eastern Stars, and I didn't like that. But growing up, we had a YMCA on Walnut Street
mm-hmm.
and the Urban League.
Mm-hmm.
That helped me a lot.
We
had a Boys and Girls Club, but it was downtown,
okay.
and I didn't belong to that. But those things, it's Urban League, NAACP, and my mother, being a beautician and couldn't go to various things that was in, she was invited to.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go, and I always thought it was so crazy. She always sending me to something with some churches having a tea or NAACP banquet or Urban League's having something. And now I know she sent me to represent the family,
mm-hmm.
and she wanted me to grow up as during the time of my life we would call. Being in society.
Mm.
You remember that term? Yeah.
So when you came to Madison
mm-hmm.
and you joined Mount Zion.
Yes.
How did you? You said you were always a do-gooder.
Uh huh. Well.
How did you get to know so many people? And
because of the beautician. Being a beautician.
Oh, okay.
That's right. That's how I, you know, being belonged to Mount Zion Baptist Church. Reverend Dawson was the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And having the beauty shop, it was only one beauty shop, see.
And, I remember that.
Uh-huh. And they all came. And so that's how you know everybody.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would just.
Mm-hmm. It's like a bartender in a tavern. People come to you with their personal things, and they'll tell you things. You just curling their hair, and they're just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you a counselor or
mm-hmm.
something. But that happens with people who have taverns and restaurants and things, because Mrs. Trotter and I used to talk about it.
And she was
that. She was that way too. Right. She would listen to people and handing them their drinks and and helping them out. Mrs. Trotter was really good at that.
What was, if you were to look back and think about some of the things that you used to do? I know you would check on people when they were ill.
Yeah, and go to the nursing home. And I can remember once I go down the street of Fisher Street and various things, and I see houses. I said, I remember telling somebody about this house for sale, one of my customers. Mm-hmm. And that was Gwen Elvar. Remember, do you know Elvar?
Yes.
Gwen came in.
She was from Beloit.
Yeah, she was. Well, Gwen came to the beauty shop to get her hair done. And seems as if a couple of days before she came, somebody said they had a house. Oh, Dorothy McKinley said she was putting her house up for sale. And then two or three days later, here comes Gwen saying, I'm looking for a house to buy. Mm-hmm. So quite sure. I said, well, I know a house that's going to be for sale on Fisher Street. And gave her the name and the telephone number. And mm-hmm. Gwen and her husband bought that place. I mean, you just... word of mouth.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I said, I've sold more houses and gotten more. And somebody said, you know, we need somebody on this job or something like that. And then, you know, with Jimmy. So I said, well, I know somebody who's looking for a job and they just come to town mm-hmm. and da da da. And your people get jobs. That's how, just word of mouth.
Right.
And like you said, how women do that more so than the men.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, especially during those times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was there any? I know that there were things that happened in the community that were difficult for Black people.
Yes. Well, my husband formed an organization, a neighborhood club, and Mrs. Maggie Davis and Blossom Maiden and all of them would come to these meetings to iron out their problems, saying that we went to this certain place and they wouldn't give us a job. And then they started a EOC commission, mm-hmm. which was just a volunteer organization. And it did so well that Mayor Fesky put mm-hmm. it in as a department at the city company building. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy was always the chairman of this mm-hmm. the civil rights organization, EOC commission, and white and Black people were involved in it. And they helped start mm-hmm. the Urban League too.
Right.
The NAACP was always here, but they had to start a Urban League. Mm-hmm. And along with Mrs. Hamilton passing away, mm-hmm. she and her husband was involved in that.
Right.
My husband was more or less involved in those things. Mine was always with grassroots people. His was more substantial.
So actually
you
kind of complemented each other.
Yes.
Where did you first live when you came to Memphis?
On Wingra Drive. You know where Ed Alexander and Jean live?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They bought our house.
Okay.
And that's another thing. Ed and will always tell you, when we left 409 Wingra Drive and bought a house on Lakeside Street off of Park Street, you know, near Park Street, mm-hmm. and Ed helped my husband build the beauty shop and barber shop, and would do cutting grass and doing, you know, chores, because he had just come here from being finishing high school to be with his grandmother, Mrs. Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
And then he married. I introduced him to, oh, that's another thing. I have married more people. I married Jean and Ed. Jean came here from... I think she's from South Carolina. Where was Jean from? I think she was from South Carolina. And she came onto the beauty shop on Thursday because she came here to live with white people to take care of their children.
Oh.
And her off day was Thursday, and she would get her hair done. And then Ed was coming up the stairs. I said, I got somebody for you to meet. And so then... I called him in. I introduced them, and he was trying to get Jean to go with another, a friend, a boyfriend of his, you know, a friend mm-hmm. that he had, pal he had, But instead of that, seems as if he and Jean, but my intention was for he and Jean anyway.
To get together, mm-hmm. and they did.
I can go through a lot of couples that
That's
I married.
That's good.
I was the dating game instead of the computer.
But that seemed to suit you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Charles Elvord and his wife had divorced a long time ago. And then there was another lady, I was doing her hair, I can't think of her name. And I said, here's a nice young man for you. And I introduced them. They married and had a couple of children.
Well, that's good. So you're the godmother to a lot of people, I guess.
Yes.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Let's see if I'm missing.
And it's because of being in the public, being a beautician, you meet more people, you know.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it sounds as though your house was always...
Always somebody there, yeah. And then another thing you should bring out, in the South, the black teachers could not go to the state schools because of segregation. So what was so silly? So the state would pay their tuition to go to the school in the North.
I remember
that. That is so crazy. And that's another thing how we met so many people, because people come to the beauty shop because they were from the South and they went to the University of Wisconsin because they had to keep their credits.
Their credentials?
Their credentials up in order to be, you know,
certified?
Certified, yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. And so, that's how we met a lot of professional people, too, that came. You had more. And now I'm meeting some of the people that I did their hair who came to go to school, and a couple of their children came to the university. My mother told me about you and everything. And
so, that is kind of neat.
You meet some of their offspring.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you still serve on some boards, and you work. I know you...
I'm with Genesis. I'm on Genesis board.
Okay.
Richard Harris's redevelopment corporation, and I'm on the board of Quaker Housing, which is on Taft Street in Fisher.
Where a lot of African Americans live.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then active on the Mother's Board, which is the same as the Deaconess Board in your church, or the Stewardess.
Right.
Stewardess, yes, because my grandmother had that little white hat, similar to that. And when I'm sitting there in church on the Mother's Board, when I first was getting ready to marry Jimmy, my mother said, now you're going to have to sit in the Amen corner.
Because you're going to be a minister's wife.
So when I'm sitting there and I'm saying amen and hallelujah to the minister, I think about what my mom said. I want to tell my mom, I'm still in the amen corner. She said, now you're going to have to sit in the amen's corner.
And you've been sitting there ever since.
And my grandson, Derek, Dina's son, when he was a little boy, I would drag him to church with us. He sat on the Mother's Board. So when he comes to visit, I said, Derek, where are you going to sit? I'm going to sit with the mothers. As if where I've been sitting on. And he's so tall, he's over 6 feet. He's about 6'3".
But he sits with you.
And he sits with me.
Oh,
he's so tall. And he's still sitting beside me with the mothers, because even as a little baby boy, he'd always sit with me.
That's a good memory.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I know
And going to nursing home. Now, I don't get to go to nursing homes and hospital visiting the ill too much because of my arthritis, and the walking is too much for me. I could do it, but it tires me out, and I'm getting too old for that. So now we have younger people that visit the sick, but I used to do that a lot, too.
But you still stay in touch
with them.
Yes.
And because my grandson and I was talking last Sunday, he said, Grandma, you remember when you made me go to all these nursing homes and see all these old people, and you would have me to pray for them and pray with them? I said, yeah. He said, Grandma, I never will forget that, how we used to visit the sick.
That's a good thing for him.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that sounds wonderful.
Yes.
I think we probably
got it all.
About the only thing that I can think of that I didn't ask you about you, mm-hmm. although you mentioned your grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So she was the one that she was the spiritual leader of our family.
Okay, mm-hmm. and she lived with you?
No, she had her own house. She and her my uncle stayed in one house. Now we stayed with her when we first came to Milwaukee.
Your parents?
My mother and father. We stayed with her. Because that's how people came from the South. You can probably remember mm-hmm. that. People coming from the South and living with each other until they could get on their feet and they branch out. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the Asians and the Mexicans and mm-hmm. and the people do now. You mm-hmm. see a house full of them.
Right.
And then after they make enough money to branch out. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way we did in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. A lot of. And then also... when my mother became ill after my father died, we brought her in, and I heard a comedian said when we would go to my friend's house, there was always some old person in a bed in the living room because we didn't have a lot of room, you know. But then yes. I said, that's true. I said, that's the way I grew up, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that they didn't put them in nursing homes unless they just have to.
Yeah.
They would be at the living house. In some corner somewhere.
Right. So you grew up with your grandmother and your grandfather?
No, my grandmother and my grandfather. My grandfather had died.
Right.
Oh, that's another story I want to tell you. Is when my mother was 12 years old and her father received a good job. He was a logger to go someplace in the South. It was in Mississippi. And they took the family to this place for my grandfather to work. The way they did the logs, you know, mm-hmm. how they would move them across the river mm-hmm. to the other side. And mm-hmm. that's how they needed the logs to make paper and mm-hmm. and build houses. So the Ku Klux Klansmen didn't like whoever hired my grandfather coming into that new city and being a logger, and they asked him, if you know of any other friends that would like to do the same work you're doing, we need more help. And my grandfather said, yes, I could get you some more people to come and help, men to mm-hmm. come and help. So during the time when my mother was asleep or in bed, and my grandmother and grandfather in the bed together, the Ku Klux Klans came, and of course, being so warm, the windows were open. And they shot and killed him with a silencer gun because they didn't want him to recruit any more
Negroes. So they
my grandfather.
Oh my
gosh. See, I didn't get to know my grandfather because my mother was only 12.
Right.
And in spite of all of that, when my mother tells the story, it's a sad story that she can remember her father being shot by the Ku Klux Klansman because she mm-hmm. said they looked out the window and they saw them running with the white sheets and mm-hmm. just the apparel that they wear. Mm-hmm. But she didn't have that bitterness and really hatred for white people.
And so your grandmother... Mm-hmm.
Was a widower
for a long time.
Mm-hmm. She married again, but she was a widower because of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then they went from Mississippi to...
to Arkansas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
Then to my grandmother and her sons came to Milwaukee first before my mother and father came.
That mm-hmm. is interesting that your mm-hmm. mother didn't have any
bitterness. Yeah, and she never had that bitterness. And like some people, they don't even want to talk to people or right. white people or you know, just didn't want to have anything. But she didn't have that bitterness. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
She was just as good to white people as she was to... the, you know, African Americans.
Right. She's mm-hmm. just a, she yeah. sort of sounds uh-huh. like that's where you got a lot of yours.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been going pretty good here.
Right, yes.
So maybe we need to stop.
Okay.
This is probably a pretty good time.
Is that okay?
And then
just get enough what you want.
Let me